Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Dr. Rachel Kleinfeld, who's a senior associate in the Democracy and Rule of Law program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She was the founding president of the Truman National Security Project and was appointed to the Foreign Affairs Policy Board, the advisory body to the U.S. Department of State. She has worked in human rights and economic development in India, Israel, and Eastern Europe, and has served as an election monitor in Pakistan and Bangladesh. And her upcoming book is The Savage Order. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Rachel Kleinfeld.
Thanks so much, Ian.
So what do you make of this musical chairs that's about to take place in the White House? The plan that they have to force out Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is being leaked, and some people think that it's being deliberately leaked by General Kelly, the White House Chief of Staff, because Trump is reluctant to fire people in spite of all of his sort of "you're fired" bluster, apparently. And this is a way for Kelly to sort of send a signal to Tillerson that it's time to go. If that's the case, then we're told that Mike Pompeo, the former congressman, now head of the CIA, will take Tillerson's job. And then in turn, the freshman senator from Arkansas, Tom Cotton, will take Pompeo's place at the CIA. So what do you make of the shuffle?
Well, as you said, this is what's known in D.C. as a trial balloon, and it's just a classic one. You leak what you think should happen, hear the fallout, make your final decision after that point. So I don't think any of these decisions are finalized, but I think you're spot on with what Kelly is trying to do. And I don't think it's necessarily wrong, particularly in the case of Tillerson. Now, I have huge disagreements with both men, Cotton and Pompeo, who are coming in, and I think they both can be quite problematic, so we can get into the substance of who's replacing in a minute. But Tillerson has been uniquely destructive to the State Department. He's also been incredibly ineffectual. Once you lose the trust of the commander-in-chief and you're speaking with different voices, not only does state not have a say in policy decisions, but you also have your allies and your enemies not believing what state's saying or being very confused about who's sending what signal. So I think Kelly's right that it's time for Tillerson to go for a whole host of reasons. Now, whether these are the men that should be replacing him is a whole other question that we should discuss.
Well, but for anybody in that job, it has to be a nightmare, particularly from the early days when anybody could wander into the Oval Office. You know, whether it's the bodyguard was sort of basically the conduit, and the kids had the rights to come in at any time. And now, of course, one of the kids, the son-in-law, has more portfolios than Rex Tillerson. So it's been pretty humiliating from day one for a pro, hasn't it?
So I think you're quite right about the humiliation, but there's something else going on with Tillerson, which is that horrific as many people find Pompeo's policies, a lot of the State Department is looking forward to Tillerson going. And that tells you something. It was more than just Trump sidelined him. Tillerson's been leading a dismantling of the State Department, really a downsizing. 2,000 of the most senior diplomats are gone, including people who are crucial for security. You know, Pompeo was one of the big speakers about the Benghazi crisis and all the things that Secretary Clinton did wrong. Well, the lead person in charge of security to prevent that in the future has left under Tillerson. So the amount that the State Department has been hollowed out and downsized under Tillerson and the demoralization that comes from that, because nobody's going to argue that the State Department didn't have some fat, but this guy is cutting a lot of flesh, means that the department itself is cheering his leaving in many, many places. So I don't think this is not a black and white issue in terms of his going. It is more difficult when you look at the replacements.
So what was it all about in Tillerson's mind, or what prompted his actions? Was it just some kind of corporate hubris that, you know, you can reorganize these government bureaucracies just like an oil company? What was he thinking?
You know, I can't plumb the depths of Tillerson's psyche. I'm not that familiar with this man, but I think he got some signals from Trump that Trump wanted state cut, and that's clear in the budget. Now, Trump also doesn't like to take the blame for things. So when things started going wrong, it could be that Trump wants to make him a scapegoat. I think there is a real feeling among many business people that if government was run like a business, it would be better. And one of the things businesses do is cut costs and downsize. Now, you in a business, there's a bottom line. Are your revenues greater than your expenses, and are you making money? And so cutting costs makes a lot of sense. In the world of diplomacy, it's a whole different matter, because ultimately, if you do your job well, America gets stronger and you prevent wars. And so wars are incredibly costly. So you're looking at a couple of unknowns when you look at your cost sheet, and it just doesn't make sense to downsize for the sake of downsizing, which is what it looked like Tillerson was doing. I think he was really following a spreadsheet that said conservatives don't like state. They tend to think that it is wishy-washy. Trump wants to cut costs and wants to cut government, and his conservative base wants that. And so I'm going to cut costs and cut government without thinking that in government, if you cut costs on certain things, such as war prevention, costs on the other side of the ledger go up in terms of fighting. So I think there was clearly some hubris there.
So we're told that Mike Pompeo, the former three-term member of Congress, who you pointed out was a big proponent of the Benghazi witch hunt, he apparently has impressed President Trump by giving him the daily intelligence briefings. And the rumor is that he's sort of a little unctuous and very ambitious. And apparently it's no great state secret that the way to get on with Trump is to flatter him and indulge him. And he did that by Pompeo, at Trump's urging, talked to a former NSA official who has this bizarre conspiracy theory that the DNC hack was conducted by an American intelligence insider. So to my mind, when you have an inexperienced and perhaps even mentally unstable president, the last thing you want in there are sycophants who indulge him. The people you need around him are people who can constrain him and educate him.
Well, now we get to the nub of the problem, which is that this president seems to only allow sycophants to be in power, except generals. He does seem to make something of an exception if you have a lot of stars on your shoulders. But he's only going to let yes men be close. And so what do you do in that situation? Who could you possibly push forward? Because you're going to get that situation with all of your potential appointees. Pompeo is smart. I mean, he was the editor of the Harvard Law Review. You don't get that post by being a dope. So in that way, he at least brings some intellectual heft to the position. However, his own friendlies in the intelligence community have said of him that he likes certainty. He doesn't like questions. He really wants answers when a job is about ambiguity. And that's a huge problem in the intelligence world, where everything you get is in shades of gray, and you have a president who tells you, I only want consensus views, I don't want to hear anything else. It's also a huge problem at the State Department, where much as many of us like a more black and white world, you're dealing with really difficult problems. I mean, take Iran, which Pompeo has been very loud about his views on the Iran deal and how bad it is and how he wants to roll it back. Iran is a noxious terrorist regime. And Iran sponsors terrorism. It sponsors human rights abuse. It kills people who are gay and locks up protesters. And no one's going to argue that this is a good country. And it's a large country. And what it does matters. On the other hand, if it has nuclear weapons, what will happen to the rest of the region? How many other countries will go nuclear? What will happen to our ally in Israel? And so on. You're dealing with difficult, difficult situations, and you have to be able to balance ambiguity. And so a man who can't do that and doesn't like to do that is a dangerous man to put at the head of your diplomatic section.
Well, in terms of Senator Cotton going to the CIA, already, as I mentioned earlier, there was a lot of disquiet amongst the CIA professionals about Pompeo meeting with the NSA official with the conspiracy theory about the DNC hack being conducted by an American intelligence insider. That was apparently upset a lot of people. But in general, you're hearing that intelligence officers think that Pompeo was far too political. Cotton is about 10 times more political, isn't it? I mean, Yep. If they're worried about this guy, the next one is a complete catastrophe for them, isn't it?
I agree completely. I mean, both of them are Harvard Law grads, by the way, as a Yalie. I want to point that out. So neither of them is dumb. However, Cotton is incredibly partisan and incredibly political and also likes his certainty. And so, I'll stick with Iran because I've already been discussing that situation. Cotton is the one who spearheaded the letter from Congress, from Republican congressmen, to the Ayatollah, the man in charge in Iran, saying Barack Obama as president doesn't have the power to negotiate this agreement. Now, everyone knows the Senate has to approve all treaties, so in that way it's fair. But the man in charge of our country's intelligence, writing to a foreign leader our country is in the midst of negotiating with to undermine our own president's position, that's the man we're going to put in charge of our state secrets? It is incredible.
But it's an anathema, though, to the intelligence professionals to have ideologues in charge, because the whole idea of intelligence is, as far as I understand, and in some ways it also applies to journalism, is that you have to be skeptical, open-minded, in effect, I hate to use the L word, but liberal in the traditional sense of the word, open-minded, skeptical, inquiring, not rigid and certain.
That's right. I mean, I used to work for Jim Woolsey, who was the director of national intelligence many years ago toward the end of the Cold War, right after the end of the Cold War. And Jim and I disagree on many things. I mean, he's a huge proponent of starting the Iraq War, for instance. But he's been a backer of Trump, which we also disagree about. However, as a personality, he's skeptical and inquisitive. And, you know, that's the kind of person who, whether or not I agree with their policy positions or their politics, that's the sort of person you want in charge of your intelligence for all the reasons that you say. Because all you get in intelligence are raw, unverified reports from individuals who are giving you that information for a reason, or SIGINT, signals intelligence, which has to be interpreted. What does it mean that this person is talking to this person, that they're saying this thing? Is it misinformation that they're trying to give you? Is it trying to put you in the wrong track? Are they trying to use the United States to fight a domestic battle for themselves and get themselves more power vis-a-vis someone else? You have to have that kind of skeptical mindset, and neither of these men do, but Cotton is, I would argue, more problematic than Pompeo.
Well, just in closing, of course, Woolsey's playing an important role in the General Flynn situation, having witnessed, or in part, what appears to have been a bizarre attempt on Flynn's part to oblige Turkish government, who were paying him tons of money, suggesting that somehow they could do a sort of rendition of the troublesome cleric, at least in terms of Erdogan, out of the country, kidnap him and send him off to Turkey as a favor, a $15 million favor, I might add, to Erdogan. That's an extraordinary situation. And so, just in closing, what do you think? It seems so much that what went on with Flynn, both during the transition and into his very short tenure, is that what the special prosecutor is looking at. And when you add together what Sally Yates has hinted at and what we know about so far, is your sense that that is really going to crack open this situation, or perhaps even maybe it's the be-all and end-all, but most people think that it will be the beginning of a pretty explosive revelation on the part of the special prosecutor?
Yeah, let me say three things about that situation. First, once Flynn starts talking, he has a lot to say. And so we are certainly going to find out much, much more about the level of dirtiness here. And I do believe that there is a lot of fire behind this smoke. On the other hand, I think that people who are opposed to this administration are doing themselves a huge disservice by spending so much of their thought on the Russia investigation. We have a good man who for now has a job, who is doing a very good role on this investigation. And what those of us who are citizens need to do is pay attention to some of the other issues where this administration is harming our democracy. Flynn's money that he was getting from Turkey is a case in point. The level of outright corruption pure plutocracy in this current tax bill that we're seeing, and payoffs from foreign governments to the Trump hotels and so on. That is corrosive to a democracy. When your country stops believing that the politicians are out for anything but self-enrichment, and the amount of money is the amount that we're seeing, that will destroy democracy long after Trump himself is gone. And so I think we need to let our man in charge of the investigation do his work. He's a great, great, thoughtful guy. And the rest of us need to be focused like a laser on what we can do to save the other institutions of our democracy. And on that, I would say, you know, we can spend a lot of time talking about the horrors of Trump's cabinet picks and what they're going to do. But ultimately, the best way to stop this juggernaut, and I speak not as a partisan here, I speak really as a small-D Democrat, as someone who cares a lot about where our country is going and is pretty afraid right now when I look at it. We need to vote, and we need to build institutions that can withstand this kind of assault on them, and those are things we can do as citizens.
Well, Dr. Rachel Kleinfeld, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks so much, Ian. Take care.
You too. And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Rachel Kleinfeld, the Senior Associate in the Democracy and Rule of Law Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She was the founding president of the Truman National Security Project and was appointed to the Foreign Affairs Policy Board, the advisory body to the United States Department of State, and has worked on human rights and economic development in India, Israel, and Eastern Europe, and has served as an election monitor in Pakistan and Bangladesh, and is the author of Advancing Rule of Law Reform Abroad, The Next Generation. And her upcoming book is The Savage Order. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back speaking with the author of a new report at Public Citizen, The Koch Government, How the Koch Brothers' Agenda Has Influenced the Trump Administration.